views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Hi, this is Bonnie Vent, and you're listening to the ParaX Radio Network.
Are you divided by the true, by the true, by the true? Welcome to the Paranormal Divide with host Kurt Smith.
All right, folks, it's Monday, July 21st. Welcome to the Paranormal Divide tonight. We have a great guest. Sounds like I'm a little nervous. I am. I mean, this is going to be an unbelievable show. I don't want to hold up anything. Let's get this started tonight because, you know what, we're going to have a great show, and we have a great guest. We have Barry Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International on with us tonight. So let's just go ahead and bring Barry on. Barry, how you doing tonight?
Hey, Kurt. Everything's going grand down here in New Orleans.
Cool. You're in New Orleans?
I am indeed, yes.
Right on. And you just came from the TAPSCon that was in Florida?
I was in TAPSCon, yes. Absolutely fantastic. Everybody there, I believe, had a ball. It was fantastic. It was a great joy meeting everybody. And the atmosphere was very alive. Rob was there, Dustin was there from GHI, and it was fantastic, an absolute craze, and I certainly can't wait to get the chance to do it again.
Sweet. And I want to appreciate you coming on my show tonight. I know you probably had a long couple of days, but I got a few questions myself I'd like to ask you if that's no problem.
Sure. Okay.
The first thing is, you know, we've seen two episodes of Ghost Hunters International air already here in the States, and there was two things that I saw that really intrigued me. And if you can give our listeners just some information about, the first thing is the full spectrum camera. When was that developed? And, you know, I saw that you got that great photo down at the Larnac Castle when you were taking some photographs. If you can just explain a little bit to the listeners.
Sure. The research behind the full spectrum camera came from work that I was doing back almost around 10 years ago. And we seen what seemed to be what suggested that there was activity which lay within the ultraviolet spectrum. Not far into the spectrum, just on the outer edge, the NUV. And so, obviously, back then I didn't have accessibility to good, reliable methods of photography, especially within the digital era. And after discussing some of my ideas with a guy in Eastern Europe, the camera was devised. And it was developed under the premise as well as in Europe we tend to look a little bit more at what the medium sees, and try to understand that, and also looking at what at kids as well as what is it they are actually seeing. Is it possible that they are kids and some of these mediums or sensitives are able to see a little bit further into either side of the spectrum than the normal human being? For a long time, humans believed that we had the best eyesight in the animal kingdom. It turned out that we had actually one of the worst. So from that, you know, obviously referring back to those spectrums, those outer edges of the spectrums, we see our own pets, our dogs, our cats. They're seeing something, they're reacting to something in the room that effectively we cannot see. So again, was it something which was in those outer edges of the spectrum that those animals, kids and psychics and sensitives were seeing that the normal Joe Blogs couldn't? And the camera was adjusted. What happened with the camera? It's a regular Fuji Finepix camera, and the hot mirror is taken off. Now that mirror allows specific frequencies of light to enter onto the CCD behind. which stores the picture, and which stores and captures, or captures and stores the picture. Now, what happened is that that hat mirror was taken out and replaced with a quartz counterpart, which allows a greater field of vision between 1100 nm in the infrared range, mm-hmm. right through the visible spectrum, and up to 300 nm in the UV spectrum. After that, it tends to drop off quite fast. If we shoot into the UV spectrum too far, then there's problems with glass and trying to see through the glass and everything else. And from my perspective, from the research, it indicated we didn't need to go that far into the ultraviolet spectrum, because it's what we believe was that it was in the outer edges of the visible spectrum. So we didn't need to blast away high into those ranges. And another aspect, I know that there are some technologies out there at the moment, video technologies, which do film moving images into the ultraviolet spectrum. But the problem with those types of cameras is that the ultraviolet light has a double-edged sword. If you apply ultraviolet light to a site that has some paranormal activity, the activity will more than likely stop immediately. The entity will back off, and that's it. There is nothing more. But what we needed to do, from our perspective, was to film or take shots into that spectrum without introducing extra UV light to it. And that's why on the show you won't see me using flash. I always use... I run... or the image itself mm-hmm. feeds off the back of the IR cameras already from the crew and from our DVR system. So it has more than enough light there and doesn't need that extra flash, which is pumping out obviously the extra UV into the environment.
Now when the full spectrum camera was being developed, were you into the with helping with developing the camera and with I guess from the what company would make that? I haven't heard the company.
The company is Fuji FinePix. That's their camera. It's a standard camera that you buy over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
But the filter itself had to be replaced. Now, which is an aftermarket affair. There is techniques on the internet which do allow people to make that adjustment themselves. But take it from me, don't try it, because I've already lost one camera, and it's a very footery little thing to try and get sorted and get fixed and get it right. If you don't get it right, well then the camera cannot focus. You'll just ruin your camera. And it's best to either get it converted,
mm-hmm.
Which there's a company up in Seattle will do it, but they will only convert certain types of camera, and can run out to be pretty expensive. By the time you purchase an SLR and then have it converted, you could be on shipping and everything else. You could probably be running towards easy around $1,500. And what I was hoping to do was to try and bring that price down by obtaining the cameras and having them converted by someone to around $500.
That'd be more reasonable.
Yeah, I think you know, money doesn't grow on trees, and I have 17 years of research experience, and I understand the pressures and the monetary pressures that can be brought under a team to try and get good equipment. So it's beneficial to try and have it accessible, and certainly in now that the show is doing very well, if I can offer assistance and try and get equipment which is working and proven in the field at reasonable prices, well then, by God, I'm going to get it done and make sure that everyone else has access to that.
Yeah, because equipment, you know, a lot of the groups here in the States are, you know, we don't charge for investigations, so it's like everyone's pretty much self-funded, and you know, equipment can, you know, with the DVR systems and the IR, that it can rack up a pretty big bill on just purchasing equipment.
It can indeed, very, very easily, because now, you know, obviously from our perspective, we're doing quite well, and we want to drive this change in equipment continually. So in our hiatus that we're not filming, we're testing the equipment. We're seeing what works, what doesn't work. So from our perspective, we hope to take that brunt of trying new equipment, and then we will release then what does work. Instead of saying, well, you might want to try that, or you might want to try that, and groups go out of fortune. No, we'll put ourselves in line and say, okay, let's see what is working and try it. And then we can say, yes, we are finding results with this particular piece of equipment or results with that. And steer people in that direction without, because sometimes it can be a very cloudy affair. You know, you're wondering, will that work? Will it not work? Do we go at the expense of that? And there's no proven theory behind it. So it can be difficult at times.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do have a question. My wife has a question for you. She loves the show, and she loves, you know, watching you on the show. She wants to know what you like and dislike about being on Ghost Hunters International.
I love the travel. I love meeting new people. I love seeing the different perspectives. Even the tribes people that we meet, some of the natives of those countries, have wonderful insights into parapsychology, and I see great similarities, even though we're thousands of miles apart. I see great similarities between the islands and the belief systems. It's absolutely amazing. You know, we stayed a night with the Maori tribe, and their stories were very, very similar to the Irish stories. And it was a unique experience from our perspective to be able to do that. And as the shows continue, you will see that there's other interaction with different cultures as well. What I don't like, some of the places have very bizarre foods. and being from Ireland, there's nothing more than I enjoy is that maybe once or twice a week is a good potato. And when you can't get that, that can be troublesome. But it is nice to get home every now and again and open a bag of potatoes and just have some potatoes. It is nice.
Cool. Okay, we're having a ton of questions come in the chat room, but I want to ask you one more thing before we get to any more questions in the chat room. And this was on the first episode of the new season of Ghost Hunters International, and I was amazed when it happened. It was the Singapore theory, when you changed the music types and you got those responses. Now, how did that come? How did you find out about the Singapore theory?
The Singapore theory itself, it was devised from research that we obtained from a group, funnily enough, in Singapore, and hence the phrase that I coined, the Singapore theory, which was in respect of their research. And what they had done was to stimulate an environment, then in particular it was a World War II environment, with some music of that era, of that side of the world. And they even went further than that. They produced pictures on walls and things like that, and tried to set the scene as much as they could, so that any spirit that would have been earthbound or whatever would have recognized what was going on, recognized the atmosphere. They had some wonderful success. So while we were in New Zealand, obviously we were in a ballroom built by the Victorians, and the Victorians loved to dance and they loved their music. We thought it was very prudent then. I spoke to Rob and said, look, Rob, this I think is going to be a good place for the Singapore theory. So we talked and talked, and we said, okay, let's do it. And that was that. So obviously, Brands, I think it was Brands, it's been a while now, was played, and we started to hear things being moved, and the atmosphere was very distinct, a very distinct change by playing that music. And then we needed to see if we were going to get a response in the big band era, 1945, because of the war efforts that Larnach Castle had given. And we never got any response from the 45s, 1945s. So we immediately went back to the Victorian era, and just like flicking a switch, the atmosphere changed immediately, and it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And obviously the face and everything else was caught, and it was wonderful. And we were able to see, obviously from the DVR footage, was that it wasn't in the IR range, and it wasn't either in the visible range. So we were left with one other side of that full spectrum camera, which was the ultraviolet.
Sweet.
So it was grand. It was a good catch. I must admit, a good catch.
What was your when you because you can see on the episode that you were it looked to me like you were excited and amazed. What was can you tell us what actually your initial reaction is when you caught that photograph?
Relief. that the work that we have been carrying out was starting to pay off. It's always nice to have that. Excitement as well. And obviously from my perspective, we needed to make sure that there was no one there. And we needed to cross-reference that with the DVR, make sure everything was right and everything was cross-referenced back and forward. And sure enough, we got what we got. And I was very, very pleased indeed with that.
And it was awesome too. I was like, dang, I'm gonna ask Barry about that when I get a chance to talk to him. Now we do have a ton of questions coming in the chat room. We have Stoner. You might know Stoner. He's from Ireland. He's part of the PIG Paranormal Investigator guys.
Right. Okay. Yes.
He wants to, he wants me to ask you about the Dublin Paracon conference.
Yes.
He's just excited about that. You're going to be a speaker there.
I'm going to. Yes, that's on the 11th of October, and I believe that it will be at Clontarf Castle. I must admit, I am looking forward to it. As I said, that's in October, and I'll be doing that speaking engagement, which will cover the new research that we're doing, the new lines of equipment. And why we've been driven down that particular path of looking for this new equipment and the sound foundations of the research behind that. And I would certainly like to address some of the differences between researching all over the world the differences between America, the differences between Europe, and see how it goes. So yes, I'm absolutely enthralled that I'll appear at the Paracon in Dublin.
Stoner also. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Barry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
A lot of people will be envious that it's happening, I'm sure.
I wish I could be over there. That'd be awesome to attend. I'm supposed to ask. Stoner wants to know also if you like your spuds mashed, fired, boiled, chipped, roasted, or baked.
All mashed. Mashed with plenty of real butter. Mmm.
That's the way I love my I had mashed potatoes for lunch today. And I do have some more questions. Blaine, he's one of the hosts of the Ghost Mafia that airs Tuesday on the Parax Radio Network. This is a two-part question. The first one, he wants to know, what's the funniest EVP you ever captured?
The funniest EVP I've ever captured?
I actually was going through some evidence and actually caught, people are going to be like, what? I actually caught an EVP that said George Bush, our president. I was like, wow, no way.
I'm not actually quite sure, because a lot of the EVPs that certainly I have captured have always been associated with a haunting. Probably a troubled haunting, so I never really went into a property with a good atmosphere, a happy atmosphere, and run EVPs. So I can't really recall any that really made me laugh as such. And I must admit, I am pretty easy to be made laugh, but I don't recall any, I'm afraid. I would have to say.
Well, maybe the second part might. He wants to know also the scariest EVP that you've caught.
No, that's different. There was one now in Eastern Europe that was confronted, and I knew exactly what he was, and he was directly addressed, to which obviously the response was to leave now. I've been told to get out. There was another one which was using foul language because I was antagonizing it to come out again, but I was told to go away in not so good terms. But there was ones like that. You know, it can have its ups and downs, and I enjoy EVP work. But certainly from our perspective now, we're looking at new technologies, which is going to bring it a lot closer and a lot better, because obviously some of the people I know from TAPSCOM were saying that they're having problems hearing some of the EVPs. So we want to address that. We want to clean it up and make it much better.
Is there new technology coming out for, because it seems like a lot of people love to do EVP work, and it seems it's like the easiest part of an investigation to capture something that's possibly paranormal. Do you see any new equipment in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. In fact, I would say in the next 6 months, I will have my hands on something which will shake things up a good bit. I can't go any further than that because it's still under research. Mm-hmm. But if it proves to be right, and initial tests certainly show it to be something to be in awe at, will be amazing. So, and they'll be pleased to know, cheap.
Will it be aired like on future episodes of Ghost Hunters International?
It could well possibly be, yes.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Depending on tests, future tests.
Now we're talking about EVPs. Do you prefer using? I mean, it seems like everyone's in the digital age. Do you prefer using digital recorders or analog recorders better?
Analog is much more versatile. However, the problem with analog is you get a lot of machine noise. And sound to ratio is horrendously bad in a lot of the lower market ones. So it's very, very tough to try and draw out that EVP response among all the noise which is caught on tape. Digital is much clearer, yes, but the signal is horrendous. And so, there's a lot of problems there as well. But as I say, we're looking at new things, probably leaving some of that behind. And we hope that the viewers love the new stuff. But as I say, I can't go into it any further because that's still under development. It'll be exciting for everyone. It'll be exciting for me. It'll bring us into a place where I don't think I've ever been before. So, I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. Now you mentioned earlier that I know you're on Ghost Hunters International, so you've been traveling the Europe and down in New Zealand. And it came about like the first season of your Ghost Hunters International. I have a question from the chat room from Paige and Sean, who are listeners that live just up the street from me. They want to know how many different languages you speak.
I'm okay with German. I'm okay with Romanian. English I'm not so good with. French I must say now that I'm horrendously bad at. And as for Spanish, no use. A little Chinese, a little Polish, a little Russian. Just enough which is going to get me through. If I suspect that there is by accounts an earthbound spirit, it's not going to know anything else but his native tongue. So if we're going to a case where I suspect that there is some earthbound, well then I would like to try and address it somewhat in its own tongue, even if it's just a few lines. If you go in beforehand knowing your lines, what you want to ask, it's best to try that. I always found that if you take that step forward to try and make contact, 9 times out of 10 they will take a step to try and make that contact as well. However, if the question is asked with no feeling or intent behind it, why on earth should they respond? If you stand there saying, "What is your name?" You know, and there's no emotional attachment to it, why on earth should it respond? If you put your feeling behind it and say, "What is your name?" You know, and give that emotion over during the question, you probably will are more likely to get your response.
Oh, I mean that. I didn't know that, but that's a great point. I'm going to make sure when the next time I'm on an investigation, you know, give more, you know, like you said, more feeling towards it. That will help me out definitely. I'm sure it'll help everyone else out too, knowing that hey, you know, if you're just out going, just throwing questions out and not throwing any emotion out there.
Every case should be, you know, I know that some people have. You know, some groups, they go to investigative sites and there's already stories about them, or maybe there's a lack of stories. And sometimes we, you know, if we go in with that mindset of, no, there's nothing here, that can sometimes have an effect on the investigation itself. Each case, I think, should be weighed on its own merit and see what the evidence gives up. Give it your 100% and then make your mind up after. We should make our mind up before we go in.
You got to go in with the, you can't go in saying that the place is haunted right away. You have to wait until after.
Mm-hmm. Or the other side of the coin, you can't go in saying it's not haunted. So leave that decision until the end.
Now we do have another question. I think you've met this gentleman before, Colm. He's from PIG over in Ireland.
Oh, I know Colm well.
He wants me to ask you if you see many similarities between the Irish and the Native American beliefs.
There is that respect, and certainly with earth spread and things like that, everything's connected. We see that back at home as well, in Ireland, and not so much in the cities. But certainly in the countryside, we see that it's much like any city. You know, we see the belief system itself dying away for a more materialistic viewpoint, which is a shame in a way. You know, it's been a long time. We live in a society where everything is rushed, and to be able to actually slow down and stop and see just what is around us and feel what's around us. Is very, very important. You know, everything we do now, we get into a car and we speed along. No one walks anymore. No one takes the time to just stop and see what really is going on. Some of that still exists. Some of the old belief systems still exist in Ireland, yes, and certainly within the native cultures in America as well. And it is nice to see those similarities. And as I said, even the other island life where we have been shooting, I can't give out where exactly until the show's air. But it was nice to see those beliefs as well still addressed in their cultures. Again, outside of the cities, inside the cities, it seems to disappear.
In the big city, it's car this and car that, and then, you know, over here in the States, not everyone's in an uproar because the gas prices are going up.
It is. It's also a shame as well. I noticed that in part, I'm not quite sure why. Maybe someone could let me into it, but the countryside seems to be robbed almost from the Americans. I drive along and I see signs up all the time, no trespassing, stamped along the trees. And I think it's an awful shame that people just can't go for a walk, you know, in through the forest. They have to go to specific areas. I'm not quite sure. I don't know why that is, but maybe somebody could send me an email to let me know why the land is locked off from people.
I wish I would know. I mean, it's everywhere you look, though. I mean, you know, a lot of the you know, the land where you walk in and all that, it's just going away because they're building everything everywhere. There's all the, yeah. I mean, you had to have national parks or state parks in order for you to have, you know, like a like some woods or a forest to walk into. It would, I mean, but it's just the expanding population and, you know, everyone living wants to live in the big city, I guess.
Oh, well, I suppose that's modern life for us.
True. Now, I have some more questions for you. I have one from Blaine. He wants to know if you're a medium.
No. So that's pretty straightforward. No, I see a medium as being someone who stands on the podium, like John Edwards or someone like that, and gives over messages from deceased. I don't do that. That's not my calling, I'm afraid. So I let someone else do that.
We haven't seen any, like, you know, psychics or mediums on Ghost Hunters International. Will we ever see a psychic or a medium on Ghost Hunters International?
I'm not sure. It's possible, maybe. What happens down the line, you just never know. We'll never say no, but, you know, we can't say yes either, so we just have to wait and see.
What's your personal opinion on psychics and mediums used in a paranormal investigation?
I think it's important to have that metaphysical balance, because I believe that science alone will not be able to make that advancement to understand the paranormal without the aid of metaphysics, and metaphysics won't be able to make that advance to understand the paranormal without the aid of science. So there needs to be a balance, I think, put in there, that and without that, it just simply won't go anywhere. I know that there are a lot of people out there that say that aren't good psychics. A lot of people out there know them. It's very difficult. And science itself is always on the change. It's always an evolving theory. Something which is proved, you know, today could be disproved within 100 years. It's always being rethought. Science is not steadfast, and neither is parapsychology by any means. I think that balance between both needs to be found for that advancement to be made.
Now have you ever been on an investigation? I'm sure you've been on an investigation with a psychic or a medium. Is there anything you do to give them a test to see if they're accurate or if they're actually giving you correct information?
It depends what type of psychic it is, because, you know, psychic abilities can vary greatly. If the person is able to pick up on historical traits or events which happened in the property, well then yes, those people should be tested on another site which has been thoroughly researched historically, and they do not know what has happened there, and see what their hits are. If they continue to have big hits, well then yes, they should be used. However, if you've got a psychic who gives over messages from deceased family and things like that, well then, you know, there's different tests for that. And so each psychic itself should be tested on their own merit, depending on what abilities they claim to have. Take it from there. I know from my own perspective, most of the good psychics you won't even hear tell of. Some of my friends back in Ireland I never seen anyone perform just quite like them, and they are really good, but they don't go around advertising in newspapers or anything like that.
You know, a lot of them out here, though, it seems like they want to make the quick buck, but that's not what it's about, though. I think it's about helping each other. That's my personal opinion.
It certainly is about helping people, though. At the same time, you know, they need to eat as well, so, you know, I can understand that. However, you know, it just depends on how accurate they are. So I wouldn't begrudge anyone making a few dollars, as long as it's done in the best intention.
True. Now I have another question for my wife. She wants to know, of all the equipment that you used in your paranormal investigations, what's the favorite piece of equipment you've used?
I would have to say to date, the best piece of equipment that I have been in the presence of is the one which is being tested now, which deals with sound. Again, I can't say anything more.
Darn.
And your wife will probably hate me for that, but it is very, very impressive. Whenever it worked, it made the hair stand on the back of my neck.
As we call it over here in the States, the shit-o-meter.
Yes, right off the scale.
Maybe in the future, that once this piece of equipment comes out, we can have you come on the show if you're available, and we can discuss it and play around with it.
Yes, that'd be not a problem.
That would be awesome.
I could probably make that call from Japan or somewhere.
Cool. Now Blaine, he just became a Reiki master, and he wants to know. Congratulations, Blaine. He wants to know if you do anything to protect yourself when you go on an investigation.
Well, firstly, congratulations, Blaine, as well. To protect myself, and he'll probably hate me for this. No, I don't. What I tend to do is make sure, first of all, that I'm healthy, which is first, and that my immune system is up to scratch. From my perspective, from my own research, that is extremely important. As long as I've got a good wall outside, well, then my inside is okay, and that works for me. Other people will be different. But that certainly works for me. And it has happened on occasions that you should have something which stays around for a little while. Well, then it's people like Blaine that get a visit from myself, makes a few dollars out of it. So everybody gets a turn out of it. So it's good to go in anyway. From a spiritual point of view, it's good to go in and get a service every now and again. It's fine. It does no one any harm.
Okay. And Blaine says thank you, Barry. Now we have another good question. I don't know, you might, I'm sure you've heard of these devices before, but Miss Paratrippy Diane wants to know what does Barry think of the Frank's box, the mini box, I don't know if you've heard of the Radio Shack hack.
The Radio Shack hack?
What it is over here is, and you'll read about it a lot on the internet over here, is you can buy a $24 radio at Radio Shack, and what you go in is you go in and clip I believe it's the mute pin that's on there, and what it does is it, instead of, you know, how you tune a radio to one station, what it is it scans all the radio stations, and it sends out the radio signal and comes back.
Okay. We run tests with several pieces of equipment that we were hoping to use, and they were using radio signals. And I was, from my perspective, from my research, I was very disappointed in the results. We found that a lot of it was radio signal, stray radio signals, and understanding the way that it bounces off the atmosphere and how signals can travel around the globe and things like that, and you pick up one or two words. It's very, very disappointing. And my own research tends to stray away from the use of radio. One particular device had Johnny Cash singing to me, and either he was at the gates of heaven singing down to me, or it was a radio station, I'm afraid. The tests that we did that were run both in the US and back in Ireland showed us that when the device was placed inside a Faraday cage, it got nothing. However, the very interesting thing was that on the recorder, that the digital recorder that sat next to it, also I believe was inside the Faraday cage. It picked up the EVP. It wasn't the other device. So whatever it is, the EVPs, we believe from the research that's being done, it seems to indicate that it's not, it doesn't work on the radio signals. The true EVPs are working some other way that we can't just understand just yet, and that's why we have made alterations to this new device, which doesn't incorporate radio signals. Because it's very, very tricky once you get into that area of radio and things like that.
I guess they're saying in the chat room that I guess the Frank's box uses white and pink noise also. I don't know much about that myself. I don't.
Yeah.
And they can say you can hear the spirits through the box. So my mind's still open. I have no idea.
Again, as I say, whenever it comes down to radio, you know, you need to be very, very careful. If someone wanted to run those tests themselves, by all means, place it into a Faraday cage and see what happens.
Okay. I mean, it's new to me. You know, I've seen a mini box been in use, and they didn't catch anything. You can hear, you know, you can hear it going shh, shh. The Radio Shack hack, I heard it used, but that one seems to be more... until there's more research done on it, it seems more it's just picking up stray words, and I guess sometimes mm-hmm. it's like playing slot machines. You're hitting the jackpot when you get something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Blaine wants to know, have you ever used I hope I say this right, either a K2 meter or a K11 meter?
Yes.
K2 meter.
Yes. Just the other night in Tampa. It was grand. I'm not aware of the results as yet because I was whisked in around this place. But I see it being used. In fact, the results of that investigation just came in tonight, so I'll get to review those later this evening. It's grand. It seems okay.
Cool. There you go, Blaine. We have another question. My wife, she always asks this question, and I think it's great. She wants to know if Barry has any tips for new investigators, what they can do out there when they're just getting into the field.
Read as much as you can. Get knowledgeable. Know your equipment. Know what's capabilities. That's the best thing I can say. Read. Just don't jump into it with both feet. Get some background knowledge on it first.
Do you have a favorite book that you can recommend to the listeners out there?
For the people who are sensitive, I would certainly say go and get your hands on a copy of Dion Fortune's book, Psychic Self-Defense, which is very, very good. There are other books out there. There are countless books in the New Age bookshops. Take a look at them. A lot of the parapsychology ones are going to be, pretty much the same. However, I must say that, come the end of September, there is going to be one released, I believe, which is going to be absolutely phenomenal. And the author, I know him very, very well. He's a very, very good friend, and hasn't let me down. His name is Barry Fitzgerald, and the book is called The Influence. There you go. My book will be out the end of September. That's a good one to read.
And where would the listeners be able to purchase that book? Is there a website, or would it be like, we have Barnes and Nobles and Borders over mm-hmm. here, some bookstores, would it be mm-hmm. or is it going to be available like on the website, like on Amazon?
It'll probably more likely available on the website, and so I'll know all of that whenever everything's finalized. I just got word from the co-author that we're looking at a completion date of the end of September.
Awesome. That is awesome. And If I can find out if I can pass it on to my listeners, that'd be great.
Sure, not a problem, Kurt. Not a problem.
Awesome. we still got a little bit of time left. I got a couple questions I want to ask.
Yes.
This one I know this is probably kind of off the wall, but what's it like working with, it seems like you're the only person from Europe that's on the show from Ghost Hunter Internationals. What's it like working with a bunch of Americans? I know they have different, I mean, coming from here, we have our own style, and I know you have your own style. Is it, is it different? Do you have to adjust? Did you have to adjust? Do they, what's it like?
I think, to be honest, and my hat's off to them, I think they adjusted to mine. And a good part. I would say they adjusted more to mine than I adjusted to theirs. everybody seems to work well. You know, it's been grand to date. At times, you know, everybody's together. It's absolutely fantastic, and the atmosphere is alive. The only complaint I would have is that, they drink all my Jameson's whiskey, and before I can get to it,
oh no!
And every place I've went to, the bar has been empty.
Oh no!
So, and not only my potatoes, but now they drink my Jameson's. So, you know, there's going to be trouble ahead, I suspect.
what's it like working with Andy? Because I mean, watching him actually debunk at Larnet Castle with a hairdryer, how did he even come up with that idea? That's just simply, that was pretty cool.
Andy who?
Andy Andrews.
Andy has a different approach. You know, he's debunker, and he goes and does his thing. We all are starting to evolve into our particular paths, and you know, it is what it is. There are some things, you know, that I do that Andy won't agree with. There's things that Andy does that I won't agree with, and it's likewise. You know, we're all one big family. We're not all going to agree all the time, but for the most part, we all do okay. You know, if there's something that he wants to debunk, you know, he talks to us about it now, and that's grand. You know, fair enough.
Everyone's like, everyone in the chat room's like, please slap Andy for us.
Yes.
So, of the places that, you know, you've investigated on Ghost International so far, I know you can't say that for future episodes, of the places that's been aired so far, what would be your favorite destination so far?
Well, my favorite destination would take me to the other side of the equator. But as it hasn't aired yet, I can't say where that is.
So that's going to be an. I can't wait. Hopefully it airs. Hopefully it airs on Wednesday. Now, are you going to be in the States to be able to watch the episode on Wednesday?
I am actually. I got a call today that I'm going to be in the States for an extra week, and so I'll be here for several weeks now. Colm obviously is listening. I need to get in touch with Colm back in Dublin. So I have to do that shortly. Where the hell was I going with that? Oh yes, I'm in America for a couple of weeks.
Cool.
So I'll get to see the shows finally, because I've always been traveling that much that I kept missing them. Obviously the show time in England and Ireland is much different than the show time in America. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it and see how it turns out. But we have been back and forward across the equator several times.
Sweet.
And hopefully many more times to come. the fans have been absolutely fantastic. And the viewing figures high, so. It's looking good. It's looking good.
Awesome, awesome. You'll hear. I don't know. The one thing that you hear, what I read a lot in the chat rooms, and it's not to blast. It is, you know, when the TV shows are on, the one thing that we get frustrated with, because you know when you're in an investigation and you're like at, let's say at Larnet Castle, you're hearing those plates move, and mm-hmm. stuff being knocked. See, what they do is they play music during a show, and we can't hear that stuff.
Well, I'll actually turn the music down the next time. I'll tell the guys to switch it off. Okay, no problem.
But the episodes have been cool so far. But I have a personal question I have to ask you. Mm-hmm. I do watch Setanta Sports over here, so I have to ask, who's your favorite curling team?
Oh, it would have to be the, my home county, Down, and yep, that's about it. I wouldn't support any other, because that's I'm not from anywhere else. So Down all the way. As I say back home, up, down, there we go.
And I just watched do you ever watch was it Irish football? They played on the same field as the curling field, or the hurling field, as I should say. Hurling.
Well, again, Down was very, 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 very good. Although I can only remember, I think it was 91 or 93 that we actually took the Sam Cup home. So I'll not shout too hard about that, because there's others will have their say about better teams, but I still have to support them, and they're a grand team. So I'll just stick with them.
Cool. I do have there's a question that Sean and Paige want to know. They want to know that book that you recommended for sensitives. They're looking into getting something like that. Can you give us the name of that book again?
If they go on to eBay and they type in Psychic Self-Defense by Dion Fortune, Dion Fortune, and that should get.
Okay. And I'll pass it on to them again, too, if they didn't get it during the show.
Okay.
So we got a few minutes left here, and I got a couple more questions from the chat room. I wrote them down, and everyone typed so fast, I can't get. I'm like, I already asked about the favorite places one, didn't I? Yes, but we can't mention that because
hasn't aired yet.
I'm sorry.
The show hasn't aired yet.
It will soon, hopefully. I can't wait. I mean, I can't wait for the one on Wednesday. Oh, I'm supposed to ask, what's your favorite beer?
Oh, Stella Artois from the tap. A beautiful little Belgian beer. Very crisp and very nice.
And we just had Dave from, he's one of the founders of Parex. He wants to say hi to Barry.
Hey, how are you, Dave?
And you were on his. They had a podcast with you on back in, I believe it was January or February.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to give a Tom wants to give you.
They could well do. I've done that much that I start to lose track. In fact, today I was thinking to myself, is this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? What day is this? My computer was telling me one thing, people were telling me something else, so I just lose track of all sense of reality, to tell you the truth.
I was like that last week because I was on an investigation in Virginia City, Nevada, traveling four time zones, coming back on Monday. I went back to work on Tuesday, and I was like, great, I'm going to have chicken fried chicken today for lunch. And they had beef macaroni. I'm like, I'm a day off or something. What's going on here? there's one other question. This is kind of an off-the-wall question for you, Barry.
Mm-hmm.
If I can remember, was out there on the first episode or the second episode? I don't know. Yeah. It seemed like, I'm not making fun of anybody, but it seemed like Brian was drunk to me on the show. He seemed like he was out of it a little bit.
I can't remember what particular episode that was, because I've been asked this before. No, he was stone cold sober.
It just seems like he was just probably tired from traveling or something. I mean, probably traveling.
The travel itself is extremely tough on the team. Myself and Rob, we are the two that have went right through to the end of the season, and we're very proud of that fact, without missing one. But I must admit, coming near the end, we finished 2 weeks ago, we thought to ourselves, either our legs are going to fall off, or part of our arms, or whatever it was. We just weren't sure. The aches and pains were starting to develop, but it's tough. Physically, it's very, very tough sometimes. I'm not so sure how that comes across in camera, because of all of the travel that we do. You know, it's 28 hours travel to Europe, or to New Zealand. And we could be traveling 13 hours, driving across Europe to get to another location. You know, it is what it is. It's part of the show, is the travel.
Now, when you're on an investigation, you know, you take all the, you know, we only see bits and pieces of it when you're going through the evidence, but how long does it usually take for, you know, it seems like it shows that, like yourself, Brian, and on this episode, Dustin, go through the evidence. How long does it usually take to go through all the evidence? We only see bits and pieces, you know, when you find something.
Mm-hmm. Ages. It takes you ages to get through the stuff. Especially if there's wireless, and you've got your DVR system, then you've got all your tapes and everything else and audio after that. It can really take a lot of time, and sometimes it can be very monotonous. But it is what it is, you know, that's part of the game. That's what you have to do. So to try and sharpen things up, you know, we are looking at some new equipment which will correlate quite a lot of stuff together, and so that we're able to see that readout and see if there is any disturbances quicker than the usual sitting down for hours and going over stuff.
I know, that's the one thing. So, I mean, I like going on an investigation, but you got all that evidence, it's like, darn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listening
that can be tough at times.
Listening to 5 hours of audio is like, I know you have to take breaks here and there, or else you're going to go, I know myself, I go crazy, it's like, I just got to step away, because, you know, I start hearing things that, was that really something, is it not something?
Sometimes, you know, especially when you're doing audio, you can filter across and just slip on to MySpace or something like that, where, you know, it takes the monotonous out of it, the monotony out of it, and you're working away and listening at the same time. So that's not so bad, you know, whenever that happens, but DVR can be the worst, obviously.
No,
you're having to keep your eyes working the entire time.
I have a question. I see the software that you use for the audio all the time. Can you give us the name of the software that you use to when you're listening?
That's Cool Edit.
Cool Edit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only software that you've used, or have you used any other ones out there that you can? What would you recommend for a beginner?
I personally like Cool Edit because I'm able to break down the frequencies. You know, I can target specific frequencies and take the rest out of a recording, to see where the majority of frequencies tend to lie, and that allows us, obviously, with developing new equipment, we can target specific frequencies where we're seeing more responses in, so it's very versatile that way. I know that there is other ones out there, Adobe and things like that. But I personally like Cool Edit. It's simple and user-friendly, I think.
And we do have a question from Michael Locke. He's from Alaska. He wants to know that, do you feel that any of the investigations are hindered by the amount of people around during the shoot and the time restraints of shooting schedules?
There can be at times, you know, and that's why on our part we would say, you know, we would then say, right, no, there's too many people here. People would be taken out of that equation, especially within the last ones that we were shooting here in Europe. We've done that. And we're seeing a better response now. So, you know, it works hand in hand, you know, both teams work together, everything's good. So that's being taken care of as well. But yes, the more people there are in a place, sometimes that can hinder an investigation.
And Michael has another question too. He wants to know if if Barry believes that entities can travel through time as well as the dimensions.
Ah, now that's a good question, Michael. I suppose, just off the cuff, I suppose it's possible. However, what we would need to see is more documentation on that. It's a theory, you know, that's just what he has stated. Like all theories, it's possible, but unproven. So until there's something out there, even the slightest piece of research to say this could be happening, well then, you know, it'll still remain within a theory.
Okay. And we're about to wrap it up here shortly. Everyone wants to know how Donna's doing. We know that she left the last episode. It sounded like she had a flare-up of her Crohn's disease, and hopefully she's doing okay. Have you heard from her?
Donna is doing wonderfully well. She was at TAPSCon, and I seen her there, and we had a blast. So there's a lot of screaming and yelling, and we had hours of mighty fun. So everything was good, and she's doing wonderfully well.
That's awesome to hear. It was like, hopefully nothing terrible happened, and you just brought us some good news. Yay! That's awesome. Well, Barry, our has gone by so quick. I'm going to give the mic to you if you want to give a shout out to anyone, if you want to say anything, promote the show coming up on Wednesday, if you can give us any information possibly.
if I knew what the showing schedule was, I would certainly would have loved to have done that. All I can say is obviously it appears on Wednesday night, but that's about it really. I'm going to enjoy a wonderful night here in New Orleans, and I believe there's a blues bar calling for me.
Awesome.
go and explore and see what this big city has to offer.
Are you down in the French Quarter?
I am indeed, yes, right just off Bourbon Street.
Sweet. I've never been to New Orleans, so it sounds like it's probably a kick in town.
It is. Now that the sun's gone down, I think it'll be okay for this white Irishman to pop out and not burn to a crisp. So I think we'll be all right.
Right on. Well, if you could stay on the line real quick after I play my intros, I'd like to personally
no problem.
Thank you for being on my show. And if you give me just 2 minutes, I'll be right back with you, Barry.
That'll do. No problem.
Awesome. Well, folks, it's been another great episode of The Paranormal Divide. We had an awesome guest, Barry Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International. The podcast should be available maybe tonight if I can stay awake. I will get the replay in too, so if anyone missed the show, they can hear the replay on ParaX Radio. Don't forget, stay tuned. In an hour, we have Scotty from Spooks R Us. Their show airs on at 10 o'clock tonight. And don't forget, Wednesday night's Ghost Chatter with Jimmy Morris. So, folks, have a great night, and we will see you here next week on The Paranormal Divide with special guest John Kuchaba, Arthur, and professor from Ohio University. Good night, folks.
This has been a production of the ParaX Radio Network.
You've been listening to The Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith, brought to you by the Peach State Paranormal Society. Be sure to join us next time as we cross into the Paranormal Divide on your source for everything paranormal, ParaX. Any use or rebroadcast of this show without written permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2008.